Andrew Ryan.
You are not. Let it go, mister. I didn't even buy the goddamn game.
Jones, contrary to popular belief, I do not have unlimited amounts of money to buy every game that comes out.
You don't have to buy everyone, just buy the great ones.
Well, I'll just borrow yours.
That's true, but but it's on the 360. I thought you couldn't play an FPS on the 360.
I'll play it if it's free.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, this is the BenHeck.com podcast, episode 69. Today's topics are... Shit. Well, wait, you come up with the first topic. Why don't you say it, Jones?
Oh, yeah. Given that, like, the last 3 weeks have been, like, the most glorious gaming weeks of my life, probably, I kind of thought of, you know, games these days seem to be just getting better while movies seem to be getting worse. And more specifically, I'd say, like, the great games seem to be better than the great movies of this generation. So I figured we could kind of discuss that and see if that plays out as true or false or indifferent.
And then based off of that, I came up with the topic idea of movie critics should just quit.
Indeed.
Because nobody cares. And
I would disagree with that, but just that it's fun to read what people's opinions are. It doesn't really impact box office, but...
Right, well, it should be called an editorial then, not a review.
True.
So, yeah, and then also we're going to talk about new games and stuff and do Andrew Ryan impressions and whatnot.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, Jones, have you played any new games lately?
Oh, I have.
What?
Like I said, it's probably been the best 3 weeks of gaming ever. Mass Effect 2 was just amazingly good. It's probably the best game I've ever played. Actually, no, probably about it. It is the best game I've ever played.
Wow, high praise.
Yes, it's... I think the thing that really sets
better
it apart...
Better than Peggle?
Hard to believe, but yes, I think the thing that really sets it apart is the fact that you get to kind of make it your own, which is the really cool part. Like, it's funny whenever I see a trailer or a commercial or whatever for Mass Effect, and you see, like, the Shepard guy running around in it, the Commander Shepard. And it's like, who the hell is this guy? Because he's totally not like my Commander Shepard. And, you know, it's just one of those things where it's so cool when you fire up Mass Effect 2 and you can import your character from the first game and you're truly continuing the story, and it's like it's your character from the first game, and there's many great sequences in it, like, you know, some very difficult dilemmas that you have to deal with, and, you know, pretty extreme consequences to those choices you make, and the voice acting's as good as any game ever. There's just, like, a lot of emotion to the game, which, you know, is becoming more prevalent in games these days, but I don't know. Just seemed like Mass Effect 2, like, took it to a whole other level. And then, and basically, like, I loved Mass Effect 1, but it definitely had its share of flaws, and in this game they just stripped, like, everything away that was wrong with the first game, and then they improved on things that were perfectly fine in the first game. And
can I inject an addendum here real quick?
Sure.
Maybe then when we talk about the movie game things, you know, like, why are the games better?
Yeah, yeah.
No? Okay, so go
true.
On. Yeah, like, because movie sequels are almost invariably always worse.
Yes.
Well, for some reason, the superhero movies, like, you know, Superman 2, Spider-Man 2, Batman.
Dark Knight
was
perfectly
good.
Excellent.
They seem to actually do pretty well.
Yeah.
Maybe because of all the backstory to draw on. All right, so yes. Go on.
I mean, like, that sort of stuff was really cool. Like, in the first game, you'd spend a lot of time in menus doing kind of tedious shit, like selling weapons or converting them to Omni-Gel or whatever the hell, and that's all fine, but...
Like, is that like Dodge Omni-Gel?
It could be. But, so they stripped, like, all that stuff away, and, you know, some role-playing people might be kind of pissed because they really cut that down a lot, but as you play through the game, the role-playing aspects kind of materialize more. Like, when you very first start playing, it's just kind of like, wow, I don't get to mess with my weapons, I don't get to do this, I don't get to do that, but they kind of keep adding more and more things for you to do to, like, customize your characters as you go on, and It just feels very organic, and it's just really well done. But yeah, so Mass Effect 2 is ridiculously awesome.
How long does it take to beat?
It took me 35 hours, actually, to beat it.
Well, that's quite a long time, actually, even for a big game.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure it can be beaten quicker. Like, I went through, and you have to recruit all these squad members, which that was another cool thing, is that, your choices from the first game carried over, and you bump into different characters and whatnot, and characters that died in the first game are still dead in this game, and the world's different because of it. But you're recruiting all these different squad members, and then the people you do recruit, they each have, like, a loyalty mission. And so if you actually choose to go and do their loyalty mission, it'll unlock another path, like, in their abilities section, so they'll get some new ability because they've become loyal to you, which I thought was kind of a neat little reward for actually going the extra mile and completing those quests. Yeah, it's pretty neat, and yeah, all the characters, I mean, the characters are so well done. It's like there's a part in the game where you have to, you know, make choices as to who's going to go on this mission or that mission, and you know there's a good chance not everybody's going to come back alive, and it's like they're very difficult moments to, you know, decide, you know, okay, these are the people who, you know, give them the best chance for success, but it's like, shit, you know, do I want to lose any of these people, you know? And it's, you know, you don't get those sorts of choices in games very often. So all of that was very cool, and it's like, you know, after seeing how high they've raised the bar with this game, it'll be interesting to see where they take Mass Effect 3.
Well, you liked Mass Effect 1 quite a bit, I mean.
I did,
they
but...
They topped that, apparently. Because yeah. I remember you, like, absolutely jizzing over that game.
Yeah, Mass Effect... Well, Mass Effect I liked quite a bit, but it definitely had flaws.
Because didn't you say it took you a while to beat it, like you just stopped playing it for a while or something?
Yeah, like, I bought it back when it first came out, and I played it a little bit, and I just couldn't get into it. And so then it, like, sat there for, you know, a year or so. And then I came back to it, and I played it for a few hours, and I still didn't really get into it. And then finally, like, I don't know, 6 months ago or so, I decided, you know what, the new one's coming out, you know, I gotta finally beat the stupid game. And so I started playing it, and for whatever reason, I got, like, really hooked, and I wound up, like, beating it 4 times. You know, I think it's like once you get to, you know, where you're learning more about the characters and you become more invested in them, then it becomes more interesting. And then especially when you realize, like now, you know, with Mass Effect 2 being out, if you haven't played the first one, you know, you can play that game and you realize, hey, you know, my choices are going to carry on to the next game. It's not like, you know, most games where, oh, you know, a sequel comes out and it's like, well, it's similar, but shit that happened in the previous game doesn't really carry over so much. Where this time, it's like, you know, like I said, if people died in the first game, they're still dead. You know, if you pissed people off, it's even like small characters too. It's very impressive when you're playing the new game, like these characters who were just brief little situations in the first game, they'll pop back up in this one, and they might play a bit more significant role, and depending on how you interacted with them, it'll change how they feel about you in the new game.
I don't think there's ever been a game before where they link the sequels so tightly.
Yeah, I think there's been games that have tried it in the past, but I don't think anything's been this successful and gone to this length. So it's for anybody who likes, you know, like kind of the action RPGs or sci-fi type stuff, I mean, like I kind of said to you, it's like, even though I like the Star Wars prequels, to me it's like Mass Effect is like, if the Star Wars prequels would have just been awesome, like insanely good, it's like, that's what Mass Effect is, and you get to play it. So that's
maybe they should
cool.
Let the Mass Effect writers make some Star Wars stuff.
That would be cool. And then I also played Bioshock 2, which...
Oh, I've heard of that.
Yeah. Which I had... And you too, I know, kind of had some reservations about it, you know, when you heard, oh, you know, they're going to make a sequel to it, because the original just felt like such a great, you know, single experience. It's like, how can they have a sequel to this game? And
I bet you're going to tell me.
well, I'll tell a little, but I don't want to give too much away. But I bought it though because I loved the first game. Until I played Mass Effect 2, it was the game I pretty much consider to be my favorite game ever, and so nothing was going to stop me from getting it. And picked it up, and it doesn't have like that great hook like the first game had, you know, where the plane crashes, you're in the water, and all, you know, there's like this little lighthouse, and all of a sudden you're like down in this like murky underwater city, and you're like, what the hell is going on? It kind of is a little more of a slow burn, I guess, or whatever, you know, to get hooked on it. It takes like an hour or two to really get into the story. But once you get into it, and it's very interesting. It drops some of the weaknesses of the first game, like the I don't want to give away the ending, but like I could talk about the ending of BioShock, obviously, because it's been out for a while. But the ending was kind of one of the weak parts, because you have like this guy who, you know, drinks some sort of goo and he becomes like super powerful, superhuman, whatever.
Yeah, it was a very typical ending.
Yeah, that shit's like gone from this game. It just feels much more natural.
See, Batman Arkham Asylum had the same ending.
And so as Uncharted 2.
Uncharted 2.
Yeah, so it was kind of a breath of fresh air to play this game.
This would be like a magical goo-drinking villain ending. It could be like the name for that.
Yeah, because it seems to be quite common. But so they don't have that. There isn't... Well, I don't know if I should say it. I will. Spoiler if you care, but it's not really a big spoiler. There's not really a betrayment this time. Which was nice as well.
Ha ha ha! I've got a different accent than I used to.
And there's like the hacking game is much more streamlined. Like I liked the hacking game in the first one, but I mean it's like you have to go into this little screen and it's like Pipe Dream or whatever, you know, where you're linking these pipes together to make the fluid move.
See, in the PC, you could use the mouse to move the pieces around. It was a lot faster.
Yes, but in this one, what you do is you have a little auto hack tool. You like you can shoot this little dart like at a, you know, a turret that's sitting over there, and then this little needle, kind of like a, you know, gas tank needle, will pop up on the screen and it bounces back and forth, and there's like green and red sections, and you got to hit it in the green sections, and it'll be like three or four times it'll go back and forth, and then you'll hack it. And so it happens like right in the first-person mode very quickly. If you hit the red, then it sets off an alarm and the bots will come after you or whatever.
Oh, isn't the mechanism by which you document the splicers and gain abilities, that's been improved too, hasn't it?
Yeah, you get like a camera like you did in the first game, but this time, instead of just taking a snapshot, what you do is you just... It takes like a few seconds for your camera to focus, but once it does, you just, like, if you're going to fight a big daddy, you take a picture of him, and basically what it is, it's kind of like a little video camera. It's like recording the whole time you fight the big daddy.
Oh, so you still have to initiate it.
Yeah, you just initiate it, but then it immediately, once you click it, it switches to the last weapon you had equipped, which is very cool. So, like, when you're getting ready, you know, you can be like, okay, I want to have this weapon after I, you know, take the, or start the video rolling. But then you fight the big daddy, and depending on how you fight it, like if you're shooting electricity at it or the wind, you know, the frost blast, or shooting it with a grenade launcher, you'll get a different score to go towards the research goal. And basically they kind of encourage you to fight the enemies differently to get a higher research score each time to keep
boosting like
it up.
Oh, like to use different techniques?
Yeah.
Yeah, the research camera was kind of a pain in the ass in the first game. I think the first time I played through, I barely used it.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is another example where, you know, they took the original and built upon it and streamlined, you know, and the first game was an excellent game, but, I mean, it's like still there were some things that could be improved, and they obviously identified those and worked on it. And for people in the first game that complained that it's like, hey, you're in this underwater city, but you're never, like, in the water, they took that into account in this one as well. There's, like, a sequence where a whole complex is being flooded and you have to, like, make your way out of it.
Yeah, that actually was... I didn't want to really go in the water, but I always thought, like, where is the scene where the water's coming in and you've got to get out?
Yep, and they've got that in this new game.
Oh, okay.
And then there's sequences where you actually are going between the buildings across the ocean floor and stuff, which is pretty cool. So you're, like, walking between the buildings of Rapture and... That happens a fair number of times during the game. And
I mean, you know, besides the fact that, you know, like if the slightest fissure in the glass, well, first of all, the glass wouldn't even work to start out with, but like the slightest fissure in the entire thing would collapse.
Yeah, it'd be done. Yeah.
But okay, that's, you know, realistic, but I just wanted like a flooding room.
Yeah.
So that's in there?
And you've got that.
Oh, yeah. Good.
And playing as a Big Daddy is pretty awesome. I wasn't sure how that would work, but it's pretty cool, like going around drilling guys and like doing the drill dash and smashing dudes. And they have a bunch of new weapons, like now you can spear people, which is kind of cool.
Do the weapons still kind of look homemade? I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
In the first game.
Yeah, it's still got that going.
Like
on.
The crossbow looked like they'd taken like a T-square or something and bent
yeah.
it.
Yeah,
that was neat.
And yeah, so a lot of stuff. And the big sisters are pretty cool. They're much more like agile and quicker than the big daddies. So it's kind of interesting to fight them.
So you could use plasmas and weapons at the same time, right? I suppose it's left and right triggers.
Yep. Yeah, because in the original you had to like switch between the two, but now you can just be like, okay, I got my shotgun equipped, and it's like, okay, I'm going to zap this guy with electricity and then quick like blast him with a shotgun. So yeah, that stuff's improved as well. And yeah, I don't know, the story was really neat as you keep getting into it more. Again, I think it was more of an emotional story. Like, the first one, it was a cool story, but it was a little detached in some ways, I think. Where this one, I think because you're a big daddy and you have to go around and, save these little sisters and stuff, you kind of become more connected to them in a way, and
yeah.
Especially with events that happen later in the game, even more so.
Well, because in the first game you were kind of an outsider.
Yeah.
For all intents and purposes.
And what was the other thing? The sequences, too. One thing that's really neat in it about playing as a big daddy is that you... like, when you first find a little sister, she's with another big daddy, so you have to, like, fight the big daddy to take her away. But then, of course, you get the choice to adopt her or harvest her, very similar to the first game. But if you adopt her, then she kind of jumps on your shoulders, and then you can go do two gatherings with her, so you, like, hit your X button or whatever, and then this little stream will come up on the screen, and you follow the stream to where this body is, and then you drop her down... And then she starts, like, harvesting the atom, and while that's going on, all these splicers start attacking. So what you can do before that is they have, like, trap rivets that you can set up that are kind of like trip wires and stuff like
that.
Yeah,
they had that in the first game, didn't they?
A little bit, but now it's like these rivets you shoot. They've also got those where it's like you shoot those with a spear, like the trip lines, but... Basically, what you can do is you can see, okay, here's the situation, here's where guys are probably going to come in at, so then you can kind of, like, set it up beforehand, hack a turret if you want to. You can even drop, like, mini turrets out. So basically, you kind of figure out how you're going to protect this area while she's harvesting the atom. And so you set up all your tripwires and stuff, and then you drop her down, and she starts collecting the stuff, and they all start attacking. And then
so protecting her is probably a lot harder than harvesting her.
Yes, yeah.
So is there actually, okay, this, I don't think this would be a spoiler. In the first game, I found it disappointing that whether you harvested or saved little sisters, it really didn't affect the end of the game that much, even though you think it would. Especially if you play through it one way, and they're like, oh, well, I wonder what would have happened if I would have played through this way. Oh, the same thing.
Yeah.
Did they improve on that at all?
And that I don't know, because I haven't played through it as, like, an evil character.
Mm.
But I've got to think, based on how the end of the game plays out, that there's got to be significant differences to... what you do at the end of the game, I would think, just based on what happens.
So I did think that was kind of weak in the first game. Like, they'd be like,
yeah.
You do feel bad or good or whatever by saving little sisters or harvesting them, but
yeah.
Ultimately in the first game, it didn't really affect.
Yeah, you just get like a different cutscene at the end.
Yeah, a different movie at the end. Or like maybe little sisters use different dialogue on you in that one scene, but.
Yeah.
Because the first time I played through Bioshock, I was a nice guy.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, wow, I wonder what would have happened in the last three or four stages if I was an asshole, and that ended up being not much, actually,
negligible
different. Amount of difference, if that,
yeah,
which
mean,
I found disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think playing it evil, I don't want to give away the end, but it's certain sequences you have to do at the end I would think would be dramatically different if you harvested all the little sisters.
Well, since 94 studios worked on that game, maybe they had the time to make more different endings.
Yeah, and what was the other thing? Oh, and there are a few points during the game where there's certain characters where you kind of have like a moral choice with them, where you can decide to let them live or let them die. And that kind of plays into it a little bit based on how this character thinks of you or whatever. So that was nice to see them kind of inject a little bit more of that morality into it. And then I know I've talked about it a lot, but also the multiplayer component in it is very well done. I was very shocked when I played it. Not Bioshocked, though.
A lot of people playing it?
Yeah, quite a few people playing it. It's very cool. It's very different than any other multiplayer game I've played before.
Just I assume you earn plasmids and things.
It's similar to like the perks and things in like Call of Duty. I mean, that's kind of like the template everybody uses now. And it's very effective. But yeah, you have certain, you know, goals you try to complete, and then you unlock different things. And but it's like the levels are cool. It's actually most of the levels are kind of like lifted from the first game, it seems like. To a large extent, which is perfectly fine, because it's kind of like a trip down memory lane. And
oh, because doesn't the multiplayer take place before everything went to hell?
Yeah, it's like allegedly? Just as things are going to shit, yeah. So that's kind of the whole premise of it, and it's neat. Like, you start out, and there's like a little prologue, and you go into your apartment, and you can do different things in there, and there's audio tapes for all the different characters you can play as. Kind of like, you know, the audio logs in the regular game, and you can... you unlock those based on what level you're at in multiplayer, so to unlock all of those audio logs, you have to get quite a ways along, but I'm sure it'll reveal more of the story of the downfall
of Rapture. The map being kind of lame in the first game. Is that in the second game?
What's that?
The map in the game to like find your way around?
Yeah, it's the same.
Oh, I found it kind of confusing, actually, but oh well, I guess I'm still out of luck.
They might have improved it a little bit. I mean, it's been a while since I've played the original, but like now you can hit like the left and right triggers to flick through floors in a level. I'm not sure if they had that before. They
that
might have.
That might be different. I like the map of Dead Space, the game you're too scared to play all the time. That one was great.
I don't know. That one was kind of, I mean, it was neat, but it was kind of wanky depending on the angle you were looking at it, I thought.
Well, yeah, but then your guy like put his arm out and then like lights up the path from the floor in the game itself.
That was
awesome.
Cool. Yeah. But yeah, the multiplayer's cool. There's, like, no spots to camp. Using plasmids and whatever to, like, fight people is ridiculously cool. Yeah, I don't know. I was very impressed by it because that was one of those things where... I remember when the first Bioshock was coming out, and a few months before it was released, they, you know, announced, hey, this is just going to be a single-player experience. There's no multiplayer. And a lot of people were disappointed. And I was like, eh, whatever. But... you know, now seeing what they've done with it, it's very cool. But I think maybe it's also enhanced by the fact that you've played the first game, and so now you're, like, getting to experience, you know, the events that led up to kind of where the first game picked up.
Well, that's cool that they kind of use multiplayer as part of the story, because, you know, when I first played Bioshock, one of the things I thought was, like, well, a sequel to this, a prequel would be cool.
Yeah, definitely. So they kind of played into that a little bit. But
that's cool.
Yeah, I was very impressed because, you know, like I said, had some reservations about the whole concept of a sequel. But
now you have no reservations like Aaron Eckhart.
Yes, like Cancer Chef.
Thank you for smoking.
But, yes, so excellent game. So I got to play two amazing games in 3 weeks. So 2010's off to a great start.
And there's only 94,000 more games to play this year, so...
I do have to say I'm really curious about that Heavy Rain game for
supposed
the PS3.
Supposed to be really good.
Yeah.
God, there's just too many fucking games, though.
I know, because then, like, God of War 3 comes out in a few weeks, and...
It's March, like, the beginning of March, isn't it?
Yep.
Great. I will buy that one.
And thankfully, I don't really care about Final Fantasy, and... Actually, kind of after the... Well, I guess Lost Planet 2 comes out in, like, May.
Lost Planet 2, and then...
There's something else in May. I can't remember what, or if I care. Seems like there's some other bigger... Oh, like, Singularity comes out, like, May, June, somewhere in there.
Yeah, it's been pushed back a couple times.
Yeah, it has to keep getting out of the way of other games. Like, I think first it was Call of Duty, and then it was, like, Bioshock. And
Dirty.
Maybe it won't move again, but...
Maybe Dave knows.
Yeah. And then Dead Rising 2 finally got announced.
Yeah, that's going to be like 4 years between games. Yeah. That was a fun game, Dead Rising.
And apparently the Xbox is going to have some exclusive episode that kind of bridges the gap between the first and second games. One thing I was a little disappointed in is that you don't play as Frank in the new game.
Frank West. I cover wars, you know.
Yeah. But hopefully they'll come up with an interesting new character. So, but yeah, so there's a lot of crap to play. But.
Well, then Halo Reach, the toothbrush game. I don't care about it, though.
Yeah, I don't care too much, but I'm not going to say I won't buy it, because if, like, Funky and everybody are on playing it, then I'd probably get it.
No, that's Borderlands, the secret game everyone owns.
Yeah, but see, by then, you know, by the time Reach comes out, Borderlands will be, like, old news, so...
Wait, so for anyone listening, apparently everyone in our friends list has Borderlands.
Yeah.
So we've been playing that lately, too.
Yeah, it certainly seems like it. That is quite a bit of fun when you get, like, three or four people running around in there.
And yeah, I was going to play with my brother-in-law tonight, but probably won't get to. Maybe tomorrow.
You never know what can happen.
It's like Christmas! We were leveling up the other day, and I made a new character with a woman so we could hear all new cheesy lines.
Yes.
And they were pretty cheesy.
Yeah, what was her what's her attack?
It phase was walk!
Phase walk, yeah. Yes. So.
Phase walk! Well, then she's like, my power is unbelievable! Some shit.
Yeah, and for anybody out there that cares, if you know somebody who's a level 50 character, just go pretty much to, like, the end of the game. Like, that end sequence where you're in the snow and stuff, and start up a brand new character and play through that with them. You'll
once.
Get yeah, one time, and you'll get enough experience to get, like, leveled up to 18 or so. And it takes, like, 5-10 minutes tops.
Yeah.
So we did that one night, and I started up, like, three other characters and boosted them all up because I want to try using everybody at some point, so...
I tried the Berserker. His attack is to punch people or something.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think doesn't the Hunter like have some sort of winged robot or some shit?
Yeah, I think you can call in some winged creatures and they'll like attack. I can't remember what it's called. It's like Rack Blood or something, because I think you control some of those Rack flying creatures. But then they'll come in and attack people for you.
Phase walk.
So.
Yeah, it's a good game. All right, well, maybe we should move on to our topics.
Sure.
All right, so, okay, video game quality versus movie quality. Well, since we just spent about 20 minutes talking about video game quality.
Let's do the movie review or movie critic thread instead.
Instead?
Just to
kind
of split it up.
Okay, so we'll cover the other one later.
Yeah.
Okay, I think 2009 definitely was kind of a tipping point. I mean, it's been going on for years, but... You know, I like to go on Rotten Tomatoes and look at the movie reviews because it's kind of interesting and fun to read. Because, like, I don't go to that many movies, but it's fun to hear about them.
Yeah.
And so often, most of these movies get just terrible reviews, but it doesn't matter. Like, Transformers 2 is a great example.
Yeah. What was that, like, probably 25 or 30% on Rotten Tomatoes?
I don't even think it was 30. I think it might have been, like, 19. It was pretty low. But nobody cared. People flocked to it.
Yep.
Well, it kind of was a fast burn, but still, I mean, nobody gave a shit about the reviews. And that movie, I actually thought was even worse than the reviews. But it doesn't matter because... Yep.
Made $400 million.
Yeah, people just don't... Oh, can you imagine how bad the third one's going to be? The third one will probably be bad enough for people will actually care.
But it'll be 3D, I'm sure.
Oh,
so,
God.
You know... Although by then the 3D fad maybe will have burned out.
Oh, no. No, studios have to lose...
I can dream, can't I?
Studios will have to start losing money on the process before they...
True.
It's like right now they're like, oh, wow, we can have a guaranteed 30% higher gross by spending X amount of dollars on making the movie 3D. Why not? Yeah. But I think you're right. If enough movies where the 3D is added posthumously, like Clash of the Titans or the next two Harry Potter movies, or... Probably the new they're splitting the last Twilight movie into two pieces.
Yeah, I
now
see
too.
That. Thank you, Harry Potter.
So, like, if enough movies come out where the 3D is added, after the fact, which doesn't look good at all, I don't care what anyone says, then I think it'll, like, dilute the experience where people are like, fuck this.
Yeah, that's my hope. Whenever I hear about, you know, like, Clash of the Titans or, like, this new Robin Hood and they want to tack it on, I'm like, good, because everybody's going to go in expecting it to be, like, Avatar 3D.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not going to be Avatar 3D. It's going to be, like, the end of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix 3D, which was shit.
Yeah.
So, hopefully it'll get to the point where people are like, why am I paying an extra $3 for this?
It's dumb. They have to go through the entire movie and assign geometries to things in the room. So it's kind of like they recreate the entire movie in wire form to make them into 3D. It's like, why the fuck?
Why would you do that?
And why don't people equate it with colorization? It's actually worse than colorization because they're taking the movie and slicing it up and moving things around.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
That doesn't look good either, just like colorization.
Yeah.
Ugh.
But anyway, back to pointless movie critics.
Right.
Who have very large thesauruses that they use.
Right. So I was thinking, the other day I was on Rotten Tomatoes, you know, usual day of, you know, using the internet to slough off as much as possible. And I'm like, what's this Valentine's Day movie? And, oh, I don't know, I think it was like 15% or something.
Jesus.
And I think, I saw some other movie review, I don't know if it was for, oh, it was for The Wolfman, and Roger Ebert's like, well, this movie's not very good, but it's better than Valentine's Day, so I'll give it an extra star. So he must have just hated it.
Wow.
But you know what? If you're some critic, like, oh, Valentine's Day is filled with cliches and blah, 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 and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's a movie called Valentine's Day, released on Valentine's Day weekend. If a guy has a girlfriend, she'll be like, I know, let's go see that Valentine's Day movie. Pretty creative thought, huh? Oh, okay, okay, baby, let's go. And it doesn't really matter. As long as the movie is not completely wretched,
yeah,
they're usually sort of okay with it, although we can amend that with what we were discussing earlier.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter. Or even if a movie sucks and the people don't like it, they'll go anyway, or they'll still rent it.
Yeah. Like, yeah, just because they got to go do something.
Right, because we were talking about earlier, like, you run into someone, they're like, oh, I rented Underworld 3 and it was terrible. It's like, what did you expect?
Yeah.
The first two movies were shit. You think the third one's going to be better? Yeah, it's like, what do these people expect?
Yeah, it's like I said, these people like go into the video store and they have like Dark Knight in one hand and they have Underworld 3 in the other and they choose Underworld 3 and they wonder why they're disappointed.
Well, I think reason why critics are... Well, okay, all movie critics are failed screenwriters.
Yes.
Because what is the adage? If you can't do something, teach. If you can't teach, criticize.
Yeah.
I know I'm probably pissing people off with that, but that, if you read any movie review,
it's true. You know, the majority of them. Yeah.
It's like, this movie captures the jingoistic zeitgeist. They love the fucking word zeitgeist.
Zeitgeist.
Oh, there, yeah, because it's like poltergeist.
Jingoistic. Yeah.
Yes.
And there's a bunch of other words, but I can't think of them.
Shit,
right now.
I was talking with Mike Kowalski's otherwise cool girlfriend about something, and she actually used the word zeitgeist.
Oh, no.
I'm like, Carly, no! Because she was like, blah, blah, blah. So it's like, okay, if you're the average person, it's like, you don't care if a movie captures the spirit of an era, which you could also just type instead of the word zeitgeist.
Yeah.
God, viewers, retire that fucking word.
Yeah, it's just like Roger Ebert. He was a failed screenwriter.
Yep. But he's
a successful
critic.
Like Valley of the Dolls or something?
I think he wrote Beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
That's what it was, yeah.
It's not that I'm faulting them for being failed screenwriters, but it's so obvious.
Yeah.
Because they try to write these reviews and they use all these $10 words. It's like, who cares? It's
yeah.
Like, first of all, no one cares about your stupid big words. Second of all, no one cares about movie reviews. Because here's another secret fact about movie reviews. People will watch anything.
Yes.
You go to the video store, and if there's a new release out, it doesn't matter if it's like Son of the Mass 2. Every fucking copy will be gone.
Yeah, like Love Guru. All rented out. Horrible goddamn movie. But yep,
all people see is like, oh, gone. New release. That's all that matters. Because, you know, people are always so busy and, you know, have such hectic lives, according to television, but they'll still rent every goddamn movie that comes out. I mean, every goddamn movie.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
I would venture to guess there's probably, the average person probably sees far more movies than I do, because I don't rent every goddamn movie that comes out. Like, I haven't seen Wolverine yet, because I'm sure it's shit. We've probably seen it.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's not great. You don't need to go out of your way.
I don't need to go out of my way, but, so people will watch, if people don't watch it in the theater, they'll definitely rent it. I mean, and I mean every movie. They'll rent every movie.
Yeah.
Like anything.
Well, I think a lot of people, it's like, you know, they get to the weekend and they just want like a relaxing night and they're like, oh, what can we do that's cheap? Because they've got like kids or whatever, you know, and so it's like, oh, here, we'll go and rent this new piece of shit animated movie that the kids can watch. And then, oh, what else is new that came out that I could watch? Oh, here we've got, you know, Bruno or something, and so they rent that.
Yeah, I bet every copy of Bruno got rented out.
I'm sure. And, oh, horrible movie. Love Guru, bad. Just an atrocity.
Oh, I did go on YouTube to watch the part where Harrison Ford tells him to fuck off. Cause
that was its one redeeming moment.
Saved myself the whole movie by doing that.
I just love how he comes storming out of there. He just looks pissed. Fuck He's off. Like, fuck off. And I was like, wow, he just said what the whole audience was thinking.
Well, even with Borat, by the time I saw Borat, I'd had the movie recited to me 9,000 times over, just like the Rick James skit.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew it by heart before I even saw it.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I just...
Yeah, with movie critics, I mean, too, it's like...
Point?
You know, like a movie like Hurt Locker, which... I haven't seen yet. I plan on seeing it, and I'm sure it's an excellent movie. You know, rave critical reviews. It made like $12 million at the box office. You know, it's like...
Just like every other Iraq war movie.
Yeah, except this one probably, you know, didn't cost like $30 or $40 million like the other ones did.
Yeah, I think they like filmed it like in America or like Mexico or some desert or something.
Yeah, but, you know, it's like there, you know, people just don't care. I think... Again, I think it's a movie that, you know, will perform very well on video because of all the critical acclaim, and I think the one thing that'll help movies more than anything, certainly movie reviews, is like Oscar nominations. Even though the Oscars are quite pointless.
Wait, it helps more than
helps
reviews.
Helps more than movie reviews is the Oscars, because it's like you get an Oscar nomination and you can always see it in the box office returns. Like the movies that got nominated, they get a bump.
Mm-hmm.
Fairly significant a lot of time, like the following weekend after the nominations, because people will be like, oh, that got an Oscar nomination, it must be pretty good, I should go check it out, you know, where it's not like some, you know, failed screenwriter saying, you know, ooh, this, you know, captures the essence of blah blah blah, you know, you should go see this. It kind of feels like you're being talked down to, I think, in some ways when you read a movie review.
Because the movie reviewer always assumes they know better than you because they're telling you what movie to see.
Yes. You know, so I think that's part of it where, like, the Oscar nominations, it's just like, oh, all these people that vote on this stuff, you know, they obviously think these are good movies, so that's what I need. I'll go see that.
It's more tangible because they work in the industry. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I think word of mouth, too. I mean, you know, people will take that above someone in the newspaper. Maybe most people don't even read movie reviews.
Probably not.
God, it's such a thankless profession.
Yeah.
I wonder if I'll get, you know, bad email over this, but seriously, I mean...
Well, I'm sure it is fair.
It's like caffeine-free Diet Pepsi. Why?
Well, it's like I said, you know, it's like I think people enjoy reading other people's opinions, you know, and like you said, you know, it should be called an editorial.
I like reading movie reviews.
That's probably true, and I mean... I like reading them because I can be like, no, you're a jackass, you're wrong, or whatever. Or it's like, oh, wow, somebody else, you know, like, I look at movie reviews and a lot of times, like, a movie I really like will, you know, get not-so-hot reviews.
You read them to reinforce your opinion.
Yes, but then, you know, you see, like, this one guy come along and he's like, hey, you know, this movie was great and here's why. And it's like, yes, you're right. That's exactly how I feel about it. And, you know, you're right. You know, you'd look at them that way. And
or
like I said, that guy gave a fairly positive review to Vanilla Sky and it was on Den of Geek or whatever, you know, and it was refreshing to see that because I loved that movie, but it got, like, critically drubbed.
That's what I like about Den of Geek. Like, a lot of times they'll... You know, what's some other movie they always bring up? I can't remember. But, yeah, they'll appreciate movies that don't get enough love.
Yeah, well, like Terminator 3 was a good example.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That they actually were like, yeah, this movie was great.
You know, it
it's
is!
Like, and you're goddamn right it is. It's awesome.
Well, X-Men 3 is another one I don't understand. Like, geeks hate that movie.
Apparently just because Bryan Singer didn't direct it.
Oh, yeah. You know, they could.
Because he's such a god, apparently.
They could just go watch Superman Returns then and have fun with that.
Which I actually liked that movie, but I would take the X-Men movies over it in a heartbeat.
Of course, not really talking about geeks here, but...
Yeah. But, yeah, it's...
Well, I'll tell you what, a lot of times, sorry to interrupt, but I'll go online and there'll be an article about anything, a new Windows phone, a new movie, and I will just skim over whatever the person wrote and go right to the comments.
Yeah.
Because that's where the real meat is.
Yep. Yep, see what the people are saying. But,
so,
yeah, I don't know.
Maybe critics. There should be a movie reviewer who just tells it like it is, because... You know, maybe there should be a movie reviewer who just says, you know what? Okay, the purpose of this movie is giant robots will punch each other and Megan Fox will run in slow motion. This movie provides that. That's all you want. This movie provides it.
Yep, if that's what you're looking for.
Rachel McAdams falls in love with Matthew McConaughey and they get married at the end. Doesn't matter how stupid the movie is. That's how it ends.
Yeah, here you go.
That's all you need. Because, like, I saw my Facebook posting from earlier, like, romantic comedies are... 99 times out of 10 is fucking retarded.
Quite a bit, yeah.
Like, it's like I said, like in real life, if some guy bursts into a wedding to stop some woman from marrying the rich guy because he likes her instead, every groomsman would kick his ass. The woman would hate him. everyone in the church would never talk to him again. In real life, you'd be ostracized from society from doing that.
Yeah.
But in the movies, as long as you're Matthew McConaughey, that's fine, because, you know, you can be a surfboard waxer.
Well, I mean, in reality, though, I mean, Matthew McConaughey lives by a different set of rules than everybody else. So.
That's true, I mean...
But I get your point.
Okay, let me rephrase that. If a woman...
Justin Long comes in at the end.
Justin Long is a surfboard waxer with a heart of gold, and he comes in to stop the woman from getting married to... it's usually like
Hugh Jackman.
Yeah,
or
Hugh Jackman.
You know?
No, it's not. Even,
it wouldn't be Hugh Jackman.
It would be like a Bill
Bradley
Pullman.
Cooper, maybe.
Yeah, a Brad. No,
he's kind
even,
of like an oily prick sometimes. So,
yeah, but you know, he's a good looking oily prick.
I
it's,
suppose
it's got to be more like kind of a disposable ex boyfriend, like a Luke Wilson, or a Bill Pullman, or someone else.
Yeah, I suppose.
And, well, that was the theme of that one Baxter movie, apparently.
Yeah, I saw that. It actually was pretty good.
And the guy, he's always, like, a totally fine guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's always usually richer than the other guy. But the woman always goes for the surfboard waxer.
Well, yeah.
Come on. Well, of course, it's a movie. Movies want you to believe that shit actually happens, and of course it doesn't.
Yeah.
But if you think about it... If you think about it, giant robots coming to Earth from another planet and transforming into Camaros while Megan Fox runs in slow motion because glasses have an inscription written on them, that's actually more realistic than someone interrupting a wedding and not being in trouble for it.
Makes perfect sense to me.
I'm sorry, I think that's just the stupidest cliche in the world.
Yes.
It's so dumb. It's worse than bulletproof car doors, cigarettes lighting gasoline. I don't know if it's worse than underwear sex or whatever that is in movies.
Oh, God. Yeah.
L-shaped bed sheets.
Yes, L-shaped bed sheets.
Suddenly coy women about their breasts after sex.
Yes.
I think it's worse than all those.
It was funny, I'm reading a book right now, and they actually kind of made a comment about the, you know, woman covering up after sex, because there's, like, the sequence, because it's like these people are both in, like, a government agency, but they're having relations, of course, and but the home office calls, and so they got to make this call, and the woman's not wearing any clothes, but he kind of makes the comment in the book, you know, that, like, and she, you know, covered herself up, even though... She doesn't really need to, so she can make the call to the home office, you know, like, that really makes a difference. But at least, like, the author, you know, kind of made a bit of a commentary on it in the way that he wrote it, which I thought was funny. You can kind of tell that sort of thing, you know, bugs him, too. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Oh, I mean, maybe we should
elaborate.
But
that is annoying, though. It's like, yeah, you know, it's like a sex scene... Where a lot of times you're not even seeing any boob anyways, but then at the end, you know, all of a sudden they're all shy and they're all like covered up with the bed sheets or they've just had sex, but yet they're wearing underwear and everything immediately afterwards.
Like Terminator does that. I love Terminator, but when Arnold comes into that room and starts beating up the boyfriend while his girlfriend is like making a sandwich. Okay, she got out of the bedroom to go to the kitchen. I can see why she'd put something on, but why does he have underwear on?
Yeah.
Well, of course I know why he has underwear on, because he gets out of bed and we don't want to see slong flapping around, but it's so fucking unrealistic.
See the daddy bag dangling, but
the L-shaped bed sheet is when a guy and woman are in bed in a movie, the covers cover up her chest but reveal his chest.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Movies. Usually can be seen in Matthew McConaughey movies.
Matthew McConaughey's
for
like,
an example.
Well, I've got my contract here. I've got to take my shirt off in this movie. Well, Matthew McConaughey's kind of like that Jillian... Jillian Michaels, that workout chick you always see.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if my stomach looked like that, I probably wouldn't wear a shirt either.
Oh, yeah. I mean, shit, if I were Matthew McConaughey, I'd run around with just shorts and sandals on all the time.
Hey, that's probably what Matthew McConaughey does.
I'm sure it's what he's doing right now. But
thing is, okay, again, if you look like Matthew McConaughey, you wouldn't have to get to the point where you had to interrupt a wedding because a woman would have already left her boyfriend for you.
Yes, exactly.
Fucking movies.
Yeah, that was funny in Entertainment Weekly one time. I think it was after Fool's Gold came out, or I don't know, maybe it was when like Ghosts of Girlfriends Past came out, but they had like this little bar chart, and it showed like, you know, these five movies and like how many minutes in each of them he's walking around without a shirt on. So it was basically like this chart for women, you know, it's like, well, if you want to see McConaughey shirtless, you know, rent this movie. And yeah, I think like Fool's Gold, it's something like 35 minutes of screen time he's without a shirt. Then there was some other movie, you know, it was like 15 minutes and whatever, but it was just kind of funny that they...
It's a good resource for everyone.
Yes.
Oh, shit, I was going to say one more thing about that whole subject. What was it? Oh, fuck. We've just planned this $50,000 wedding, because nobody in movies has a wedding that costs anything under like $30,000.
Yeah.
We've just planned this $50,000 wedding. Oh, you don't want to get married? No, okay, that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, who cares?
Never mind.
Like at the end of Mamma Mia. It's like they spend all this time working on weddings. Like, oh, let's not get married.
Yeah.
In reality, people would be pissed.
Well, see, that's why Pierce stepped up.
Oh, that's another movie confession. Never waste a wedding.
That's right.
See, I can see it in like Spaceballs or like Shrek. Because in those situations...
They're just ridiculous anyway.
They're ridiculous enough that it doesn't matter. And Shrek actually made sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because she didn't really want to get married to this guy anyway. It was just an arranged marriage. And she wanted to get married so she wouldn't be an ogre, right?
Yes.
But then Shrek's like, I like you anyway. And then they eat the John Lithgow king, so it doesn't matter after all because he's dead.
Yep.
So that's perfectly fine.
And he liked her for who she was.
Yes.
Shrek did.
Because knowledge was the real treasure. You know what I like about the National Treasure movies? At the end, they keep the fucking treasure.
Yep.
It's not like, oh no, the treasure just fell into a pit.
Yeah.
It's like, nope, we got the treasure.
Yep, and they're driving Ferraris and owning ridiculously huge mansions.
Yep.
It's awesome.
Hanging out with Angelina Jolie's dad.
Yeah. Yeah, National Treasure kicks ass.
Yeah, it's the fun. Second one was...
It was okay.
Ending was kind of lame, but up until that...
It's basically just a complete rehash of the first movie, but that's fine. It was still entertaining.
Yeah.
Nick Cage is always entertaining.
True. You're probably going to go see Sorcerer's Apprentice then?
He looks kind of nuts in it, so, I mean... I do have to see that Bad Lieutenant Port of Call New Orleans, or whatever the hell it's called.
Maybe to be as good as The Wicker Man.
I guess he's just nuts in that movie, because he's, like, strung out on all sorts of drugs, and he's, like, this cop, and...
It's supposed to be good, isn't it?
That's what I've heard, so... Anytime Nick Cage gets to just cut loose and be batshit crazy, it's gold, so... I've heard that's basically what that whole movie is. So, we'll see.
Well, shall we move on to the original first topic, which is, why are movies getting worse while video games are getting better?
Yes, let's move on to this topic.
Well, do you think it's because the video game industry is kind of maturing? I mean, the technology of the consoles is... The technology has actually enabled the games to become deeper and whatnot, whereas the technology in movies has actually caused them to become more shallow.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's like... with video games, too, like the budgets have grown... Which, I mean, you could say the same for movies, but I think the budgets are better utilized in the gaming industry. A lot of times with these game companies, I mean, you're especially seeing it now, it's like they can't afford to have, like, a flop, especially not an expensive flop. Like, they got to deliver pretty much every time out.
Yeah, because how often does a bad video game sell a lot of copies?
Yeah, not very often.
I mean, like, a bad licensed movie game might move, like, a million if it's lucky, but if you want, like, an 8 million, 10 million copy hit, like Assassin's Creed 2 or Call of Duty, the game has to be good.
Yes, yeah. And it's, you know, like, with movies, you know, like, yeah, you can just dump a piece of crap out, and you put enough marketing behind it and whatever else, and, you know, put toys in Happy Meals, people end up going. But yeah, like with the technology thing too, you know, like we've lamented special effects in movies a lot of times on this podcast, I'm sure. You know, and I think it is, you know, weakening movies because you watch a movie and even as good as the effects are getting to be these days, it's like you can still tell when something's not real. And it's like, yeah, granted, a video game isn't real either, but
It's consistently unreal.
Yeah, it's like you know that going in, but you get to experience it in a different way. Like, you get to take part in the action. You know, like I was talking about with Mass Effect, you know, it's you make some choices, you grow attached to these characters, and you're actually confronted with very difficult decisions, you know, which is, it adds a whole other layer to what games are compared to what a movie can be. Like, a movie, you only get to see what the director wants you to see.
Right.
Where with a video game, it's like, yeah, sure, you've got this world that they've created, but, you know, like in Fallout 3 or whatever, you know, you're allowed to just go and run around. It's like, eh, I'm going to go running over here, over this hill and see what's here. And, you know, I'm going to go into this town and I'm going to, you know, set this nuke off, or I'm going to shoot this guy because I feel like being a prick, or I'm going to save this town because I'm a nice guy. And you get to create the world and interpret it in your own way, and I think that's a lot of what's helping games become a lot more than what movies can be. And I think we've talked about this, you know, in the past few years about, you know, like movies kind of falling by the wayside and video games gaining prominence for reasons like that.
Well, God, how much did they, didn't they say, like, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 made, like, $1 billion or something?
Yeah.
For instance.
And it's only been out, yeah, a couple of months or whatever, and it's like, well,
yeah, Avatar's made more than that, but that's,
yeah,
that's a very rare exception to the rule.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of it is, while we're on the word Avatar, I mean, in a video game, you are the main character, and your choices directly affect the world around you and whatnot. Whereas in a movie, you know, they're usually like a blank slate because they want the audience to be, like, projected onto them. But look at, like, Sam Worthington. He's in all these movies, but he's dull as shit.
Oh, yeah.
Or, like, Sarah Jessica Parker. Sarah Jessica Parker, I mean, she's, like, lame.
Well, women like her because women...
Because she's not good-looking.
Yeah, because she's not hot. She's not
great
Charlize
thing about,
or something.
Another great thing about Ed Wood is they actually acknowledge that.
Yeah, I thought that was awesome. With her in the movie, even.
Well, you have all these, but you have, like, you know, Sandra Bullock or Meg Ryan or Kate Hudson, and they're all either, like, you know, old, flat-chested, dowdy, something. You know, they're not... I mean, that's... You never see Angelina Jolie in a romantic comedy because, you know, she's...
Because women will hate her.
Right. It's always, like, this generic woman. And then, like, in the guy movies, you've got, like, a Sam Worthington or a Seth Rogen, you know, kind of like a generic character. And, you know, that's kind of... That's kind of the movies offering this kind of blank character for the audience to insert themselves into. But that's about all the further they can go with that concept. For the video game, they literally are putting you into it.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, if you watch, like I've mentioned before, like Uncharted 2, I mean, that story near the end, like, gets you more involved emotionally than most movies I've seen in quite a while.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if characters die in movies, but I actually was really upset that blonde chick was going to die in Uncharted 2.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, yeah, it's just something, I mean, the thing, too, with a video game is that you spend more time with it. You know, like I said, I took 35 hours beating Mass Effect 2. And, you know, like Uncharted 2 took, you know, what, 10, 12 hours to beat.
Yeah.
So it's like you're spending more time with these characters as well, and games can let that develop more as you're with them. It's not like in a movie where it's fairly rushed, you know, like you've talked about with romantic comedies. You know, it's like you watch a romantic comedy, it's like, oh, okay, this guy and this girl are going to get together because they're the guy and the girl in the movie.
They're in the same movie.
Yeah, so it's like... Okay,
well, here's
fine.
Thing. I think this is the same logic about time could be applied to TV shows. I mean, most TV series are better than movies. I mean,
yeah.
And it's because you get to know the characters through all the... You know, even one season of a show is like, you know, like what, 40 hours? I mean,
like 20 usually. Sorry, yeah.
But it's
like 10 times as long as a
right.
movie.
Or Lord of the Rings. Like, by the time you get to the third Lord of the Rings movie, like, I had never read the books, right? Yeah. But then I was at the third Lord of the Rings movie, and I'm like, oh, crap, what's going to happen to Frodo and this? And I had no idea. So yeah. It was actually quite suspenseful for me. But, yeah, I think, like, you know, time is a very important thing. And that's the problem with movies is, well, anymore, if you have a new movie, a new property, they spend the whole movie setting up the sequel.
Yeah.
And so the whole movie is kind of a waste in a lot of cases. And that kind of sucks.
Yeah,
the movies anymore can hardly be their own entity. They always have to be made to make the next one. Where games, you know what? They just want to ship that game. That's all they care about.
Yeah.
And so you talked about BioShock. And like, yeah, the first one's perfectly fine. But then you say the second one doesn't seem superfluous. So that's good.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's another thing I was going to bring up. The cost. Although, well, okay.
Yeah.
$60. Okay, let's say you go to a movie with someone and you both get popcorn. You know, you might spend like $30.
Yeah.
At the very most. Like, not if you're in a family. Of course, families don't go to movies that often. But so that's still half as expensive as a video game. So maybe the video games are like, okay, hey, people are spending $60 on this. We have to give them their money's worth.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, oh, I rented this movie for $2 or 50 cents or whatever the Netflix, you know, cost would be, and it's like, who gives a shit?
Yeah.
And that's why most movies are shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's like, I've watched a bunch of crap on Netflix, because it's like, well, what the hell? You know, I just got to put it in my queue, and it shows up in the mail, and I watch it. You know, that's how I saw Bruno. You know, it's like, right. I figured it was going to be bad anyways, but I gave it a shot, and it was fucking terrible. But, yeah, and I think that's... But I think it's kind of like we've talked about with directors, you know, too, like with the game studios. It's like they pretty much have to nail it each time out in a lot of cases. Even the bigger studios can't really, you know, drop like $50 million and have something fail. Where like with the movies, you know, you can have, you know, Peter Jackson come out and, you know, make Lovely Bones, which, you know, probably didn't cost that much money, but it definitely didn't, you know, set the box office on fire, but it doesn't really matter. He can keep trying and trying and trying. You know, like M. Night Shyamalan, even though I like him, he's a good example. You know, his last couple of movies have not performed well at all, but he gets to keep making movies, you know, and it's like at a certain point, he's going to get to where the studio's going to say, this is your last shot. And then he's going to have to try. And then he's going to deliver something like Unbreakable again. We can hope, anyways. You know, but it's like with the game studios, it's like, well, okay, BioShock was a success. You know, we're going to make a sequel, but we got to nail this one, too, because if it flops, we're done.
Well, I mean, they, you know, the game studios are a lot smaller, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yeah, I mean, you can read about, what is it? You know, even when, like, EA right now is not doing so hot, it's like, you know, people buy their games, but they're still in trouble.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, they can just have released a big hit game. Like, I saw at Best Buy, there was more copies of Bioshock 2 on the shelf than Dante's Inferno, but apparently EA is still in trouble. I mean, it's like they're on the razor's edge, sort of. So, yeah. Well, it's kind of like what we talked about with Sony. If the PS3 had the same failure rate as the Xbox 360, Sony Corporation would probably be out of business.
Yeah.
But they made the PlayStation 3 good because they had to make it good.
Yeah.
Just like Ford and Chevy now.
Yeah.
Chrysler's fucked, so.
Yeah.
They have to make good cars because they have to prove themselves. Whereas Toyota, for instance, let shit slip by because people just thought they were golden no matter what, and now you've got all these recalls.
Yeah.
Or like the Xbox 360, you know, obviously, Microsoft didn't want all these failures to happen, but they could afford it, so in a way, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, to them, it was a calculated risk, because to them, it was more important getting to market a year ahead of their competitors and gaining market share that way. So, you know, they took a calculated risk, and, you know, I suppose when the fallout, you know, when people wade through it, you know, I guess it'd be debatable as to whether that was a good choice or not. I mean, they've obviously performed better this generation sales-wise than they did the previous one, so maybe it was worth it, you know, to get there. I don't know, to take that risk and to, you know, eat $1 billion in, you know, repair costs and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, because if they would have taken their time and brought it out at the same time as the PS3, you know, who knows what would have happened. Maybe the Xbox wouldn't be where it is now. It'd be, like, way back in third place or something.
It could still end up in third place. I think that's entirely
possible. I think it's entirely possible, but still, they've significantly outperformed the previous generation already.
I don't know if they're rushing the market was necessarily... I think it's like oversight that caused the failures. So it's not necessarily how quickly they made it.
Yeah. I mean, it's similar to other things, you know, where
because, you know, I'm a, you know, Microsoft defender to the core, but I mean, their failures, I mean, I think only just recently have started to drop off. So it wasn't just like consoles made in November 2005. It was like consoles made
it
in
was
November
for
2007.
Years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, like any company, they make mistakes, and that's fine. And
right, so to sway this back to where we were going, yeah, so game studios have more to prove, and so therefore they prove stuff. I mean, like, you look at, like, what is it, like, the Tony Hawk ride, like, apparently that bombed.
Yep.
So if they make another one, they're going to have to actually get their shit together.
Yeah, otherwise it's lights out. I mean, shit, you know, look at Activision, you know, for another example. It's like, you know, they had Call of Duty, they released, it's making tons of money, but they still were down last quarter overall compared to the previous year, and they, you know, faulted the rhythm game industry for that in large part, which... I think Activision's stupidity where the rhythm game genre is concerned was more of the problem, but now they shuttered Red Octane, which made all the peripherals.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, they actually shut them down.
Oh, yeah, I heard that like the DJ Hero sequel won't have it'll just be a disc.
Yeah, which would make sense.
Well, it's like, well, you know, we talked about that for years, too. Like, if you build your entire business model on something that is just a fad, eventually it's going to be gone.
Yeah.
And you have no one to blame but yourself.
Well, and anybody with any common sense would see, you know, you buy Rock Band, you know, most people are going to be like, well, okay, I've got my guitar and drum kit and shit, so when Rock Band 2 comes out, they're just going to buy Rock Band 2. They're not going to buy all the instruments again.
I mean, the instruments did improve, but, like, the point where you got, like, the Guitar Hero 3 guitar, which is probably what the vast majority of people still use.
Yeah.
Because I would estimate that Guitar Hero 3 is probably the top-selling rhythm game of all time.
It is, easily. It's one of the top-selling games of all time, actually.
Right. It's kind of lame because it's nowhere near as good as Rock Band. But anyway, you know, most people, you know, probably got that guitar, or the Rock Band 2 wireless guitar is really good, and that's all they need. They don't need the Beatles guitar. They don't need the Guitar Hero 5 guitar.
No.
Because you can only have so much plastic shit laying around your house. So, wait, so who's going to make their stuff now, their guitars?
They said they kept on a few key members of Red Octane, so I'm sure there'll still be, you know, something along those lines done, but...
God, they must be expecting it to crash.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked, because it's like, wow, Red Octane, they were right there on the ground floor with that whole, you know, genre, and they got whacked, and I guess EA's not too happy with Harmonix either, from what I was reading.
Well, I heard the contract is almost up on that, actually. Like,
is it?
Yeah, like, EA's... Well, EA just publishes it, but EA's, the right to publish Rock Band ends in March or April.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. But yeah, I guess Harmonix laid off like 35 or 40 people in December, and then EA gave them like that huge bonus a year or so ago. Like that $150 million. Apparently they're trying to get some of that back now.
Oh, just like Barack Obama.
Which I was like, how the hell do you do that? It was a freaking bonus. But then they said, what is it, that they're going to be... Sounds like there's going to be more oversight in the process of what tracks get licensed for the game. Which sounds disconcerting. Although it could be a good thing, because...
Well, are they going to make Rock Band 3 ever?
I should hope so, but I don't know.
Of course, if they're not making, like, Rock Band 3 or whatever, maybe they don't need as much staff. I mean, if they're just making the tracks.
Yeah. I mean, they're making... Well, then they're doing that Rock Band Network thing, too, which I'm not sure when that's actually supposed to launch, but that'll be interesting to see how that plays out, where, like, bands or whoever can make their own tracks and get them released.
Yeah, I could see... bands with a decent amount of money doing that.
Oh, yeah.
And garage bands might do it, but, you know, you still got the XNA license or whatever, and there are some, even like a garage band, like, $100 a year, they might balk at that. But
yeah.
You know, Trent Reznor, I could see, probably get in there.
Yeah, I could see him. Because, I mean, shit, he does, like, everything himself anyways. I could see him just, like, salivating at, like, oh, yeah, I can make all of my songs into rock band tracks. Sweet.
But what if, like, you could import Pro Tools and, like, kind of just translate your stuff right over?
You might be able to. They have, like, all the stuff out on the Rock Band site that shows, like, what you use to make the tracks.
Oh, but, this is kind of off topic, but apparently they're making a Call of Duty MMO.
Yep, I heard about that a couple of months ago where it was
rumored. Wouldn't that be called the Army?
Yeah.
Who wants that?
I'm sure it'll...
You think if
successful.
Any company would realize the futility of making another MMO, it would be Activision.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get why they would compete with World of Warcraft. I mean, it's like their own product. So, I mean, they own Blizzard or their, you know, whatever they merged.
Because that's the conventional wisdom right now is that, you know, Treyarch is making the Vietnam Call of Duty and Infinity Ward is making the MMO of Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, people can pay $15 a month to play Call of Duty.
Although they burned all their bridges with the PC game players with this last one, I thought, so.
Well, yeah, would it be a console MMO?
I don't know.
I'm surprised no one's pulled that off yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's if you're going to make an MMO, that's where you go with it.
Can you imagine, like, if they could get World of Warcraft to run on the 360? Although, the menus are so complicated from what I've seen.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's the trick. If somebody can pull something like that off, like, I think, isn't that... Star Wars Old Republic MMO, isn't that supposed to actually be on consoles?
I don't know.
BioWare is involved in it. I haven't heard a lot, but I thought that was actually being developed for consoles.
So do you think that one will be successful? I mean, BioWare certainly knows their shit.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody could potentially pull it off, it would be them, because their name means something. I mean, I would definitely give it a go. It's like, it's BioWare and it's Star Wars. And Knights of the Old Republic was excellent, and the Mass Effects have been excellent, so...
I can't believe anyone would want to play the same goddamn game for 6 years.
Yeah, I don't get that. I guess
and
the...
And to do it?
Yeah, what is it, $15 a month or $10 a month or
you
something?
You know, like, that's like... What is that? That's like, 15 times 2, 30, 60... It's like you could buy 3 games a year for that.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know.
Of course, I buy more than 3 games a year, and I don't play MMO, so technically the MMO people have more money than me, but I get to play new games.
Well, that's what I always say, like with Mike, you know, when he gets, like, Call of Duty, and he plays it for, like, 2 years or whatever, you know, it's like, in some ways it'd be kind of nice to be able to do that. It'd be way cheaper. But I just can't do that. I gotta, you know, play whatever the new thing is or whatever. And I gotta have variety too. I just wouldn't be able to do that.
You know, I've like played online. I played Call of Duty 4 a lot, and I like the multiplayer of Call of Duty World at War a lot. But I also played other games.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. It's the same thing with Rock Band. I mean, I like Rock Band, but I can only play for so long before I get tired of it. And it's the same thing with online. It's like, okay, I could play about five or six online matches a night, and then I get tired of it. I haven't in a while. I should, but...
Yeah, it's like with the BioShock 2. I played it... I think I've played it for, like, 2.5 hours so far altogether, you know, and I can... It's fun, but, yeah, I can see just playing it for, like, a half hour, 45 minutes at a crack, and then moving on.
So, apparently, the Modern Warfare 2 online is, like, totally glitched and hacked.
That's what I hear. I think even on, like, the consoles, it's supposed to be pretty glitchy from what I've read.
Or, like, people have figured out every possible exploit. Like,
yeah,
you can equip such and such perks and hold a signal flare, and you can run, like, 3 times faster than a normal person.
So it's like, who sits around and figures this shit out? That's what I always wonder, you know?
Remember, IWNet is going to stop all cheaters.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's... You know, I mean, people exaggerate, of course, but I see in posts online, you know, like in whatever articles, and people will say, you know, that, like, the online's just completely broken on the PC, I guess, and whatever, and, you know, who knows, maybe it's partially true.
I think the PS3 version is better, but, like, I guess the Xbox one as well. It's just...
Yeah.
Like grenade, or like more, claymores shooting bullets. And
wow.
I can't imagine that, you know. How would you ever, how could you have so many things in the code? You know what I mean? How could you find that many
flaws? Yeah.
I mean, I remember in the olden days, you know, you could do like a trick and get Sonic to like walk off the edge of a ledge and go into the minus world or whatever the fuck it was. And that was like one thing, but this is like, yeah, mortars shooting care packages. Like, how the fuck does that sneak it without actually hacking the code or having hacks, because you can't really do that on the Xbox. How the fuck did people figure that shit out?
Yeah, I mean, that's what was shocking me about it, is when I was, you know, reading that this was like on the consoles that it was really bad. I was like, how the hell do you even do that? You know, and because even if you've got like a modded Xbox and stuff, I don't know if you could even, you know, do any stuff like that. But
probably could, like Game Genie style. But
yeah,
well, I guess from what I've heard, apparently, well, you know, like all these douchebags in Xbox Live are all like, you know, pubescent boys and stuff.
Yeah,
like, young kids, like young boys, love hacks and cheats and games. Like,
yeah,
for some reason they just love that. So since that's a lot, unfortunately, a lot of people on Xbox Live playing the M-rated game are like, you know, 13-year-olds. They love the fact that they can exploit. They don't care about like the sport of the game. They just like the fact that they can cheat.
Yeah, that's like, it's funny you bring that up, because there's this kid on my friends list, and I met him and his dad playing Lost Planet, and we played the shit out of it back in the day. But when he saw that I had Borderlands, and he messaged me, and he's like, oh, hey, I know this hack you can do where you can get like these glitched weapons and stuff like that, and he's like, I can, you know, jump in and show you how to do it. And I'm like, that's okay, I'm fine, you know, but he was all about that.
Well, I remember playing with Vannert last week.
Yeah.
You know, we were leveling up, and I'm like, okay, I think I'm leveling up a little too much here. Yeah. Like, I want to enjoy the game.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I went off and used, like, these other characters I hadn't started. Yeah. But and then, like, that same kid, I remember playing, like, Halo 3 one time. He invited me in, and so I was like, yeah, okay, you know, I'll play for a while. And him and this kid, they were just going around, like, in Forge doing shit and trying to, like, get off the map or, you know, whatever, like, doing these goofy things, you know, setting up a bunch of stuff and it would make some goofy thing happen. And I'm like, I don't care. I just want to, like, play the game, you know? It's like, it's cool if that's enjoyable to you, but it's not to me. I just want to experience the story and play the game how it was meant to be played.
Yeah. Yeah, so. I don't know why that's so appealing to them, but I just want to play the game.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to, like, because it's a game. I don't want to have an advantage over other. I want my advantage to be my skill, not the fact that I, you know, read more things on the internet than they did.
Yeah.
To do a cheat. I mean, I don't know. I just, it's a video game. It should be fair, you know? It's like.
Yeah.
But, of course, maybe that's because I'm old and.
Yeah,
so I'm 50 years old. I'm the Hurricane.
But, yes, yeah, so,
quality.
Yeah. His job one.
I'm Mike Rowe. I used to just do voiceovers for TV, but now that I'm actually on TV, they'll show my face. Buy a Ford.
Yes.
Well, so I guess, games have to be good, you know?
Yeah, maybe that's why. I mean, granted, there's a lot of shitty games that come out, too.
On the Wii.
You know, we're not saying that everything's, you know, gangbusters or anything, but it just seems like the quality level higher.
What's a really high selling shitty game? That's not, let's say just that's not on the Wii, because that doesn't count.
Yeah, I was gonna say we can't say like Wii Play.
I think even on the Wii though, there's like a limitation. I think, you know, maybe 4 million copies is about the most turds you can shovel.
Yeah, God, I don't know, like...
Was that Two Worlds RPG on Xbox supposed to be pretty bad?
Yeah, that was supposed to be pretty terrible. It was like...
a sequel.
It was like Oblivion if everything had been done wrong, I think, is how I heard it described. But, I think that sold all right.
Look at the PlayStation, like, Lair got punished, Haze got punished, Heavenly Sword, well,
I don't think it got punished, but it wasn't very good, I didn't think.
Which one?
Heavenly Sword.
Right, and none of those games really made that much money either, because no one cared. I mean, granted, you have games that are really good and no one buys them, but, you know, if as long as people know about a game, like Borderlands, I mean, a lot of people apparently have bought it. I mean,
I think that's a definite like word of mouth type game. You know, it's like you just. I mean, the reviews were pretty decent for it, but then it just kind of turned into this little phenomenon where you know, like you see, oh, this person's playing it. Oh, this person's playing it. So then you like message them, and it's like, hey, how is that? You know, and they're like, oh yeah, it's great, and blah blah blah. You know, and then you go out and pick it up yourself, and then it just kind of keeps spreading and. You know, it's, I guess that's kind of how it should be, but, yeah, I don't know. That's like it was, it's like it was so great when Mass Effect 2 came out, because I looked at my friends list that week, and I'm like, wow, something finally knocked off Modern Warfare 2. Because my friends list up to that point, it was still like every night, like 70-80% of the people that
really?
Were online were playing Modern Warfare 2.
Mine wasn't really, mine was maybe 50%, not that high, but maybe it's just different people, obviously.
Yeah, but yeah, since like Mass Effect 2 came out, it seems like that kind of like shattered that whole thing, because even now, you know, like Mass Effect 2, I've got like a couple people a night playing it, but everybody else seems to be kind of spread out over different things now, too.
Well, see, if, Infinity Ward or Rockstar made like a big game like Grand Theft Auto 4 or Modern Warfare 2, and if it was as shitty of a game as like Transformers 2 was a movie,
yeah,
like people might buy it, but their reputation would be in the toilet.
Yeah.
Yet, but they've got to make they've got to continue to make good games. Whereas you know Michael Bay's Transformers 3 will probably be just an like a greasy cinematic abortion being drugged down the sidewalk of pain.
And it'll still make hundreds of millions of dollars.
It'll make less, though, because it's going to be shit.
It'll probably, well, I don't, yeah, it'll probably make less.
It'll make less, because it's, come it'll, on, how can you not make
it? It'll easily make 300 some million domestically, though. Easily.
It'll make less.
Though. I'll bet you on that.
Okay. Wait. I'm agreeing with you, then why are we betting?
Well, I don't know. At first you were like, so. But then you agreed, so.
I don't know. My box office prediction was kind of blown to hell with Avatar.
Yeah, I bet like 225, so yeah, I was a little low. Unfortunately.
Although I was right about the New Moon opening, because you guys thought I was nuts. And not only was I right, but I was like, more right than I realized, because I said like what I'm like, oh, it'll make over 100 million, and then it did like what 150 or something ridiculous.
Yeah Did that make 300 in the end? It was close. I don't know if it actually made it.
It was probably within swinging a dead cat. It was like 290 something.
Yeah,
I don't know if it ever limped past. I bet you Iron Man 2 makes a lot of money.
Yeah, that'll probably, I'm sure that'll make
that'll
over
make
300
million, I'm sure. What if that'll be good? I mean, I'll go see it regardless. I mean, it has soldering in it. The trailer for the new one has soldering in it.
Yeah, that's such a weird movie for me, because I remember I saw it and I liked it, but I've tried watching it a couple times since, and I just haven't been able to do it.
Oh, I still love it.
And it's not that it's like a bad movie. I don't know. I just can't get myself in the mood or whatever. It
I like
just
the part,
doesn't hook me.
Once he gets back to his house, and he's got the drawings for his suit that he made... in his computer. I don't know how exactly he got them into his computer, but the first thing he does is he takes like 90% of it and throws it away and just has like the inside.
It starts
and that
from
is
there.
So realistic. That's what I like.
Yeah.
And then, of course, soldering.
Well, of course. But
well,
yeah, so I don't know.
Oh, shit. We've gone over. I think we should wrap this up.
Oh, no. I can't believe it. Well, it was bound to happen.
Oh, have you noticed that like, people seem to hate Watchmen now?
Do they?
I see that a lot where people think it's terrible. I thought it was good.
What is this, like the Titanic backlash, except it came about 3 or 4 years too early?
I told you, the Avatar backlash is going to be bad.
Oh, that's what I said. The minute people get that thing at home and watch it on their TV without the 3D and having it on the small screen, I think people will realize
and
how empty and how shallow that movie is.
Realizing that's long as hell.
Yes, and that nothing really happens in it.
And it has a montage in a James Cameron movie. Ugh.
But see, that was another great example of, like, you know, that movie is... It's definitely Fern Gully in space, apparently, which I haven't seen, but...
oh, it is.
But, you know, to me it was like, well, it's Dances with Wolves in space, and nobody cares. People still went and went and went and
enjoyed
it. Because
that movie got good reviews.
Yeah. Yeah, it got just as good of reviews as Titanic, actually. Like, the tomatometer or whatever is, like, the same for both of them.
So, you think about it, if you have, like, doesn't matter what the reviews are, as long as it's marketed a certain way, a movie can make $300, $400 million like Transformers. Yeah. But if you have a movie that is, like, the least bit decent and gets good reviews, like Dark Knight is another example, you can make $500 million. Yeah.
Except Dark Knight was, like, really good.
Oh, yeah. Well, except for the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's not perfect, but that's a movie that I was happy to see make that kind of money. It's like, wow, it's not, like, a piece of shit like Shrek 2 or, you know, the Pirates sequel.
Although I would say at least $100 million just because Heath Ledger died.
Oh, probably, like, $200 million.
Yeah, that's...
Because the original made, like, $200, but... You know, that's another great case of having to approve yourself. Like, Batman Begins made, like, $200 because people were kind of like, well, we still remember Batman and Robin or whatever, you know, and so it kind of had to prove itself, and it did. Right. And so then The Dark Knight came along, and I'm sure The Dark Knight would have made 300-some million for sure, even without Ledger dying. But Ledger dying kept it in the media for, like, what, 6 months, basically? Yeah. You know, so by the time it came out... Like, what, late July? Yeah, it was basically like 6 months after his death, but it was in the media, people were very aware of it, and it's like, oh, I gotta go see this guy's
last performance. When I read that Heath Ledger died, they're like, Heath Ledger died, but apparently he finished all looping or whatever for the movie, and I all thought, wow, Warner Brothers has gotta be loving this.
Yeah. And yeah, it's kind of sad, because when he died, the first thing I thought of is, it's like, oh shit, I wonder if he finished all of the filming for Dark Knight. That's the
first thing I thought.
You know?
Oh god, what do you think people at Warner Brothers thought?
Oh, I'm sure.
That's all, they don't give a shit if he's dead, as long as he's done for the movie.
Oh yeah. But I mean, you know, you kind of feel a little
dirty.
No, they
get a chiropractor to do this.
Yeah.
I'm the Joker! Oh, I put my arm over my face like Ed Wood.
Ed Wood style, yeah. But you feel a little dirty when you have that thought. But I'm not a studio executive. But remember, that was the first thing I thought.
Oh, yeah.
So it's, but yeah.
Oh, come on. You can't tell me when Heath Ledger was, you know, dead. The first thing they probably thought is, oh, shit, is he done with the movie? And then they probably already were thinking, okay, we need a sound alike to do the looping and blah, blah. I'm sure that was all going through.
Oh, yeah. Well, if I were at the studio, that's the shit I would have been thinking of.
Then it's like, no, we got all this looping. And they're like, cha-ching.
Yeah, they're like, okay, gold mine, but now we can't look like we're exploiting it. You know, okay, we have to just control this situation.
Our condolences to his family. Cha-ching.
Yeah.
Wasn't it like one of the Olsen twins gave him drugs or something?
Something like that. Like, hey, him and her were kind
of Mary,
Kate, involved or
Ashley, or
something.
Why don't you give these to Heath Ledger now that he's done looping?
Yeah, I think you're right. $200 million, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I mean,
that movie is good, but
yeah,
it's kind of dark. I mean, it was a well done movie, but it's not really what I'd call like a super popless movie.
No, like I couldn't believe people were taking like children to see that movie.
Right.
You know?
I mean, even Avatar. I mean, I can concede that it's kind of got something for everybody, sort of.
Yeah, even though it's still, like, blue cat people, and I can't imagine, like, grandparents wanting to see it, but apparently some do.
Well, I think Dark Knight's a really good movie, but until the end, the last 10 minutes, like, the...
Yeah, it gets a little
3D
shaky.
3D vision, it basically looks like a Tom Clancy video game, and then Christian Bale yelling at the Joker in Christian Bale voice for like 2 minutes. It's almost like comedic at the end.
Yeah, the part where he's basically giving a speech in the voice. You know, where is he? Voice. It's like,
you can't beat me because I'm the Joker. I am the right part of the city, and I am actually a George Bush analogy, and war on terror. Rah, 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 rah. I am John Connor. Rah, rah. I will keep this city in equilibrium.
Wow, you just said that.
Because I am the machinist.
I was just thinking of the machinist, actually. Somehow I knew you were going to go there.
Then I will go to the Empire of the Sun. How's that for obscure?
And be an American psycho, apparently.
He was kind of an American psycho in Batman.
Yeah, he was. But,
was that name I came up with for Cider House Rules? God, what was it, like Abortion Doctor Kid or whatever? Because I thought Cider House Rules was a confusing name.
But Charlize's ass wasn't confusing.
little AI.
That's what it should have been called. Was Charlize's ass. It would have made like $150 million.
But it
probably could
have been like in like the scripty font.
Yeah.
You know, like all like the
or Charlize's derriere. You know,
yeah, yeah.
Make it a little European.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're like, wow, this sounds like a really artsy movie. I should go see this.
An artsy movie, and apparently there's an ass in it. So yeah. There we go.
See, that's another part. It's like, what do people remember from Cider House Rules? Do they remember what the Cider House Rules were? I don't.
Nope.
There, I know there were some rules.
Well, it was like when people would ask about The Spirit, and I was like, well, it's a god-awful movie, but you do get to see Eva Mendes' ass at one point.
Yeah, it's not as gratuitous as the Charlize
one. No, not at all. And it certainly doesn't justify the existence of the movie, but it's in there.
We should do a podcast about most gratuitous nudity sometime.
Oh, yeah. See, it's pretty gratuitous in Cider House Rules. I mean, it's awesome, but it's just like, oh, he walks in this room and there's Charlize laying naked on a bed. I mean, who wouldn't want to walk into that room? But,
well, it's like...
I guess, but the thing is, that makes it more natural, I guess, you know, to kind of go back to our original complaints.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's more realistic, you know? It's like she's, like, wanting to seduce him or whatever.
Well, you see all these movies where, like, Will Ferrell's running around in his underwear or less. It's like, okay, if you've got Tobey Maguire...
I was
going to
say underwear. When does that happen? Usually he just goes birthday suit.
If you've got, like, Tobey Maguire, Michael Caine, or Charlize Theron in your movie, which one do you make be naked? It's not rocket
science. It's not
hard. Or if you've got Matthew McConaughey in your movie, take off his shirt.
Yep.
I mean, why not?
It'll add $30 million to your box office.
It's like, yeah, okay, Ghost of Girlfriend's Past. We haven't got his shirt off yet. Let's have... Oh, he had sex, and he puts his shirt back on!
Yes, there it is! Ching!
Well, let's have him on this boat on an island, so it's kind of hot, so he doesn't wear a shirt.
Yep.
Because he's... Hey, he didn't take his shirt off in Tropic Thunder, though, did he?
No.
He had a wee...
No, I don't think he did.
God, I bet women like all over were just like dripping when they saw a wee and Matthew McConaughey in the same scene. They're probably like, oh, I'm getting divorced right now.
They're like, that's the dream right there.
Gulfstream 5.
Yeah, that's true, though. But it had a fat, balding Tom Cruise with hairy knuckles in it, so I guess that overcame the shirt-wearing McConaughey.
And, what's-his-face from Eastbound and Down was in it.
Oh, yes, Kenny Powers himself, Danny McBride.
You know, I didn't, like, think that movie was the greatest, but it was pretty funny.
That's one that actually improved on repeat viewings for me, because when I first saw it, I was like, eh, whatever.
Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, and then I watched it again on, you know, Blu-ray or whatever, and I'm like, wow, yeah, this is pretty funny. I think once you detached yourself from the whole, you know, like, ooh, this is supposed to be kind of like a satire and all that, you know, and just kind of took it on its own terms, then it's, like, pretty damn funny.
Because, you know, Ben Stiller, you know, ever since, like, his Something About Mary days, he just makes, like, these lame PG-13 comedies where, like, he's slapping a monkey for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, it's not funny. So maybe he's like, you know what, I'm going to make an R-rated movie with, like, you know, blood and guts and...
Yeah.
Swearing, and, you know, it was kind of like a release for him, almost.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Who left the fridge open?
Tug Speedman.
The same thing happened 5 times before.
Oh, God. It's awesome.
Satan's
Alley. Satan's Alley. With Downey, and then, what was it?
Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, no, what was it? And he learned to question his God, and it's like... Yeah! He just lets out this yell, and it's just so, so dead on. It's
I never go
so
out of character funny. Until I do the DVD commentary.
And it's awesome. If you watch the commentary for Tropic Thunder, he's in character through
the
whole thing. Yep.
Well, I saw that movie in the theater, and like the very first thing you see in that movie was that booty sweat commercial.
Yeah.
So if you see that in the theater where you've seen a bunch of shit like Coca-Cola and... You know, tampon ads. And then as soon as it goes right into the booty sweat, you think it's an actual product.
Yeah, I remember
when
I...
What the fuck is going on?
Yeah, I remember when I saw it and, like, yeah, the booty sweat thing, I was just like, what the fuck is this? And then I can't remember which one's next, if it's, like, the Jack Black thing or the Stiller. But once one of them showed up, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. This must be
the movie.
Part of the movie. I'm like, okay. But yeah, the booty sweat thing, like, I can't remember the guy's name that plays him. He's some rapper, I think, but, you know, I didn't recognize him, so I'm just like, what the hell is this shit?
Yeah, it was really confusing, but yeah. In a good way. Well, I suppose we should wrap it up since we've gone over again into a fistful of podcast length, as I like to always rip on.
Yes, but this one's becoming kind of fistful-esque. So.
All right, well, we'll see you next time, so watch out for those movie reviewers and keep supporting good games.
And don't leave the fridge open.